Adventist World Radio, from broadcast to baptism, powered by SID Media.
Moruti lukuluane dumela.
Dumela ntate le kae?
Re teng le kae Moruti?
Re teng my leader Erra.
I mean, I saw that it was quite hot in Gaps this afternoon. Is it still hot?
It is. But I think the temperatures today are much better than yesterday.
Much better than yesterday,
We had a surge of rains, and then when the rains are departed for a bit, we are dealing with extreme temperatures. But God is keeping
us. No, God is keeping us indeed. I was enjoying those rains, and I was wishing they could go for longer.
Indeed. We do pray for those rains. We really need those showers of blessings.
Oh, we need them, man. We definitely need them. Now, let's go on with our discussion for this afternoon. We started this discussion yesterday, and we did some introductory, points there. And today we are continuing and talking about God's plan for marriage, which is a union of a man and a woman in a committed lifelong relationship. And I think this is how Donald Trump understands it as well. Now, Mark 10 verse 9 says, "What God has joined together, let not any man put asunder." And when we then share marriage vows, God sees those as binding for a lifetime. How do we do that? So we're going to be answering this question as we, are having this discussion this afternoon. So, Pastor, what are the biblical guidelines for a very good marriage?
All right. There are just a few I'd like to share in the interest of time, but I think you did highlight one of the foundational principles, which is that a marriage or a biblical Christian marriage is a lifelong union between a man and a woman, and that's founded in Genesis chapter 1 and 2. Also, Christ mentioned this in Matthew 19, verse 4 and 5, when asked about divorce, and he says, "In the beginning, he created them male and female." So that is very important, especially in the times that we're living in. The second one is also to acknowledge that a good marriage or a Christian marriage is a God-centered institution. And we see how, for example, in the first marriage between Adam and Eve, Genesis 2, verse 22 to 24, God was an integral part of bringing these two together, the man and the woman, and blessing the first marriage. So it's a God-centered institution. The next thing, which is very important to emphasize, would not have done justice to the program by not speaking about this one, which is the importance of exclusivity in the context of intimacy, that is, between one man and one woman. Mm-hmm. That is to say, no third parties, and God forbids adultery in the marriage relationship. You cannot have a healthy marriage where adultery is in the picture. And that's based actually on one of the Ten Commandments, which is Exodus 20, verse 14. The other thing also is to realize that the standard which is set for marriage, for a good marriage, is a husband to love his wife as Christ loved the church, and for a wife to submit, Ephesians 5, 22 to 33, and also that God has given different roles to a husband and wife. Men and women are not the same. We have to accept that. Mm-hmm. And Ephesians 5 gives some insight into how the man or the father is the head of the household and the priest, and how men and women play different roles, even in raising children. So when people align with these roles, a family a marriage works best. And lastly, that love in the context of a husband and wife is a principle and not a feeling. You can look at the definition of love in 1 Corinthians 13, 4 to 8. Love is patient, love is kind, which is basically the description of the character of God. I don't love my wife because I feel so. I love her because of a principle that stands before a holy God. So these are, I'll say, the six. I've just mentioned six in summary, but you can expand them beyond that, which are the biblical basis for a good or a healthy Christian marriage.
All right. Now, how important then, I mean, having mentioned all of those, how important are faith and beliefs when it comes to marriage? And what does it mean to be equally or unequally yoked? And I think this is a very important subject, especially for those who, especially for those who are thinking of, getting married.
All right. Thank you so much. I think that's a very important question. And I would say when we look at the principle of worldviews, it would see that our worldview, our beliefs and our faith specifically, especially as Christians, shapes everything that we are. For example, if we just go down to the details of our daily living, how you eat, how you spend your time, what you do for recreation, et cetera, all these things are informed by your faith and what you believe. Therefore, when you are making a decision to marry someone, it is important to factor faith into the equation, because it's going to affect how you relate and how you are compatible. And actually, marrying someone who doesn't share the same beliefs as you can actually create unnecessary tension or conflict, and has even resulted in some unfortunate, irretrievable breakdown of marriages, because it's like two people speaking different languages and pretending they understand each other. So faith and beliefs are core when it comes to marriage. And where people do share the same beliefs, there's harmony, there's actually a healthier and more vibrant life to the marriage. And lastly, on the question of what it means to be equally yoked in the spiritual sense, I believe this is an illustration that comes from the writings of Paul in 2 Corinthians 6, verse 14 to 16, says we shouldn't be unequally yoked with unbelievers. By the way, this is an illustration that draws from the agricultural or the farming sector or world, whereby when you are plowing with animals in the field, if you are plowing using cows on a particular day, you don't put a cow and a donkey together. You put a cow and a cow together. When you put two animals that aren't the same under the same yoke, you have chaos that results. So this is the illustration that is drawn here. So the basic principle that is there is to say that when you're making the decision to choose a life partner, make sure you choose someone who shares the same spiritual values. But I'll take it beyond that and say the same spiritual identity as you, for practical reasons of compatibility. Furthermore, when you look at it biblically from the Old Testament, you'll see that whenever God spoke about this, he was referring to spiritual Israel versus other nations or the pagan nations that were surrounding them. And that's why God would say, do not give your sons to them or your daughters to them. And one of the reasons was that they will turn their hearts away from me. So I think that is the idea of being equally yoked or unequally yoked. Say, if we're saying equally yoked, we're saying find someone who shares the same spiritual identity as you for reasons of compatibility.
I normally see or hear people saying, "Oh well, he's a Christian, would may not necessarily be going to the very same exact church, but at least we're all Christians, so we go for it." I suppose is that a good start?
Yeah, that's actually one mistake people make. In fact, I've also seen that in those contexts, what people tend to reason out is that, oh, but we love each other. But one of the things that you realize very quickly once you are married is that love in itself is not enough. Just to give you some practical scenarios,
Okay.
imagine a situation where, for example, I believe in going to church on Saturday or maybe the Sabbath, and someone goes to church on Sunday, right? Immediately, when the first weekend of our wedding honeymoon comes, I'm going to church on Sabbath. Someone says, hey, I'm not going. The other one is going the next day. There's already a point of conflict before any other issues arrive. Imagine you are raising children, and then unfortunately, a loved one passes away. One person says, oh, our loved one has gone to heaven, is in heaven right now, looking down on us. The other one says, no, our mom is not telling the truth. This person is in the ground, they are sleeping. And children are like, okay, what's going on here? So you'd realize that while you are outside the marriage covenant, it looks like it's not an issue. But once you're in, all these small issues, for example, as pastors, we deal with painful situations where, for example, you don't believe in eating pork, Leviticus 11. Another person is, quote unquote, believers, loves pork. And you're going to be forced to cook for someone something that you believe you shouldn't even be touching because you made a decision to marry this person. So issues of faith are not small. They actually make or break relationships, which is why they should be considered when we're choosing people before we get into marriage.
And others would actually say, well, it's okay, although we are not seeing eye to eye now, we have agreed that he will or she will come to my church, as soon as we are married. In fact, I see many males, would say that according to tradition, you as a wife are now supposed to be joining my church. Would that be a good enough reason to go ahead?
And I think I love this question very much, because when we look at the issue of faith and belief, one of the things that the Bible is very clear upon is the fact that God has given us free will or the freedom to choose. And I love John chapter 14, verse 15, which says, if you love me, keep my commandments. One thing that we need to understand, especially as men, because I think in the Southern African context, we're generally patriarchal, is that the only reason people should make decisions in a certain direction as far as faith is concerned is because they have the conviction conviction that this is the right thing for them to do. We shouldn't put people in a situation where they are making decisions and accepting the beliefs that we hold so that we can continue with them or so that they can love us. The only reason I should adhere to a certain spiritual principle is simply because the Holy Spirit has convicted me that this is right, not because my husband says so, or my wife says so, or so that I can keep the marriage going, or so I can keep my husband lest he leaves me, or my wife shouldn't be forced to join my church because I'm the man. The Bible says, if you love me, keep my command. So I think we should learn to respect people's individuality as far as conscience is concerned. And this is one of the major challenges that comes when people get into unions with people who don't share their beliefs, because one of the people has to allow their conscience to be trampled upon and literally has to subject themselves to spiritual slavery because of convenience. So I think in my view and understanding of what the Bible teaches, let us not coerce people into accepting our beliefs because of convenience or because of keeping the relationship alive or making me happy as a man or as a woman.
Moruti linyalo le skara saman. Jaanong ga ke tlo go tse go tlogela motho o ke nagana gore I know wa itse keng a re dumelane re nna ke a tsamaya yaanong lenyalo ke leo le tshabile.
Right. You know, one thing that I think we mentioned when we're starting ke gore marriage is a lifelong covenant. It's a lifelong commitment. But here's the thing. One of the, and I think the question you're asking is that found directly in 1 Corinthians chapter 7, verse 12 and 13, that deals with the situation of what happens when along the way, or you find yourself in a situation you are married, but this person no longer believes, or you are now a believer, the other person is an unbeliever, and vice versa. What should you do? The immediate counsel that Paul gives is say, listen, do not, as the believer, initiate the divorce or put your partner away or leave them because they do not believe as you do. Rather stay with them. If they are willing to continue with you, do so, because perhaps by God's grace, in the process of doing so, that person will be won over by your Christian life. But then the Bible also goes on to say in verse 15 that now if it happens that this person chooses to leave you and go, also respect their decision and submit to that. So that is the general counsel. So it just shows you that marriage is not a joke. God makes no exception to say, oh, this person has now left the faith. Oh, no, the marriage is over. This thing is a lifelong commitment, and it shouldn't be dissolved, or you shouldn't leave someone because they no longer believe as you do.
Now, can you still be unequally yoked even when both of you are of the same faith?
Thank you so much. I think that's a very important question. And this is why when we counsel people, especially in the premarital context, we say to them, listen, not everyone in the church is right and is righteous and is right for you. What we mean by that is based on the teachings of Jesus, we see that in the very church of God, there are the wheat and the tares, the sheep and the goat. There are unconverted people in the church. And sometimes it's so bad that if you look at their traits of living and their characters, they're probably maybe somewhat from the human eye look worse than those out there in the world. So ultimately, remember, the basis of Christian marriage is that when you are ready to get into a covenant and you are ready for marriage, you pray to God to lead you to someone in the church, and God is the one who brings the two of you together as he did Adam and Eve. And the Lord will always guide your feet. If you pray to him by faith, he will lead you to someone who shares the same beliefs as you do. But if you do the choosing, you might find yourself with a tear or a goat. I mean, figuratively speaking, yes, sir.
Yeah. All right. No, Pastor, thank you so much. Before I let you go, we've spoken about this. We've looked at different angles. What would be your final message surrounding the subject we discussed today?
Right. One of the things that I'll say is to get the most out of marriage, because I think we live in a broken world where we see so much that is happening all around us, both within the church and outside, that even has even scared some people saying that maybe the solution is not to get married or marry at all. But I'll say that marriage is holy. Marriage is a blessed institution by God. It is a beautiful thing when done according to the principles of God. So one of the best things you can do for yourself, whether you are married or not, is to give yourself time to understand what God says about marriage in His Word and align your life with that. And when you do that, you'll experience the most out of your marriage, out of your family, and you'll live a fulfilling life. Even in this world of sin, we can enjoy blessed unions and little heavens on earth only as we align with the principles of God. So my encouragement to everyone who is listening to this program is let's align with the principles of God so that we can get the most out of life, even abundant life itself.
Beautiful stuff. Murudi, thank you so much for your time. We'll connect again tomorrow one last time. And for this afternoon, please do have a fantastic, fantastic rest.
Thank you so much. God bless you.
Lovely. Thank you.
You are tuned into Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media.